is Fantasy Football Today from CBS Sports.
Here we go.
Email us at fantasyfootball@cbsi.com.
Here we go.
It's time to dominate your fantasy league.
Let's go.
Now, here's Adam, Dave, and Jamie.
Getting ready for Super Bowl 51, although to be quite honest, I think it might be Super Bowl 52, and David Jamie told me it was 51, so I made a mistake on the air, but no, it's probably 51, right?
51? Well, which is it, Adam?
I'm going to say, because last year was the hubbub about Super Bowl 50, and it was on CBS, so I'm going to say 51, right? L1?
Final answer. And you thought we were lying to you.
Yeah. 51. Final answer.
It's like you can't even trust us with simple information.
Okay, Sunday in Houston. New England and Atlanta. We will definitely talk about that. We actually have some fantasy relevant stuff though, because Dave and Jamie were skipping along in Disney last week, and they were in Orlando, going to Pro Bowl practices. Did you stay for the game?
No, no. And only one of us was actually in Disney World.
How come you didn't go to Disney, Dave?
I don't have a pass anymore. My kids are a little older and they aren't as interested in going to Disney World.
Really?
We used to go all the time when they were little, when they were Jamie's kids' age.
Oh.
Now Jamie's kids are at that right age, so at one point I believe Jamie went by himself.
I did.
To Disney World, went on the teacups by himself.
I did.
Did
wait.
The Small World by yourself, had the whole book to yourself.
Wait. Your kids, Dave, are not too old for Disney. I mean, I don't know what too old for Disney is. I think you're a teenager, Disney is still fun.
Okay, well, my kids didn't want to go.
Okay, fair enough.
Several years ago, we asked them, do you want to go to Disney World or do you want a puppy?
Oh.
Because, like, the cost of Disney World, pretty expensive. Cost of a puppy, also expensive. And the overwhelming vote was for the puppy. And ever since then, no Disney World.
Yeah, yeah.
It's funny when you say overwhelming. You have a family of four.
Right. It was 4-0. 4-0.
That's pretty overwhelming.
In full disclosure, we did go to Universal. Recently, we actually, a good friend of the podcast, Eric Gray, was kind enough to let us into Universal for a couple of days. We had a great time. And I think that that's more the type of thing that my kids are into now.
Okay.
You know, the thrill rides, the excitement, Simpsons World.
That's fun.
Harry Potter.
All right. So listen, give me your best fantasy football takeaway from covering the Pro Bowl.
I think the Seahawks, I'm kind of drinking the Seahawks Kool-Aid. Talk to Doug Baldwin, talk to Jimmy Graham. And I feel like the excuses, and I don't want to use excuses in like a negative way, but the reasons why they thought they weren't playing in the Super Bowl were valid to the point where it's just for 2016.
Okay, what were those excuses?
Russell Wilson gets right. If the offensive line gets right and the chemistry develops between Wilson and Graham, that offense can take the next step.
So do you think Jimmy Graham could be a lot better for fantasy next year?
He was pretty good for fantasy this past year.
He was good, but he was...
Top five fantasy tight end.
He was home road, very home road.
I don't think he'll be where he was when he was with the Saints. Those 2 years with the Saints with like 1,200 yards, double-digit touchdowns.
Yeah.
I don't think he's getting back there, but 1,008? Which is pretty amazing for a tight end these days. No one did it last year. I would say he can potentially get there.
Oh my gosh. He was the number two tight end in fantasy last year in standard, but he was probably number five in PPR.
There were three tight ends that had 80 catches. There were only two that went over 1,000 yards. So.
And both of the ones that went over 1,000 yards, I believe, combined for 7 touchdowns.
Yeah. Uh huh.
Kelsey. It was a real crappy year for tight ends.
Wow.
We never really got into this.
I think it's the first time since 2006 that there hasn't been a tight end with 10 or more touchdowns.
We didn't get into this yet, Adam, but the top 12 average for tight ends and fantasy points. So this is the average fantasy point per week that the top 12 tight ends had. 6.6 per game.
Ooh, that's
down
bad.
A full point from 2015, which means that if your tight end got 7 fantasy points, he was doing better than the average of the top 12.
Which means Rob Gronkowski got hurt. Mostly.
Not just him. Eifert. Reed missing time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Did Jimmy Graham feel like the number two tight end in fantasy? He was fourth in PPR. He certainly didn't feel that way to me.
He felt like a top five guy. I don't know, like number two.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Like if you were to ask me without knowing, I'm obviously I know. I would say Kelsey would have been one. I would have said Olsen was two.
Yeah, and it was very close and standard. Right. It was 1 point. And Kyle Rudolph was 1 point behind Olsen at fourth
right.
overall.
There were some good performances. I mean, Rudolph certainly was one of them. You know, and I think we had a lot of disappointments, you know, just with the injury to Gronk. Martellus Bennett not necessarily filling that role like we hoped. Delaney Walker took a huge step back in terms of his production.
Mm-hmm.
Evan, the whole position took a step back.
Okay, Jamie, how about you? Give me your biggest fantasy takeaway from covering the Pro Bowl.
There really wasn't a takeaway. You know, it's just getting a chance to ask these guys about how they felt they performed last year and how they think they can do moving forward. Like, it was fun. I was giving Heath and Chris a hard time because I spoke to Melvin Gordon and, you know, I said, what was the difference for you? And he said, everybody hating me. You know, so I told Heath, I said, you help Melvin Gordon have a big year. So, you know, it was stuff like that.
So Todd Gurley, big year next year.
Ezekiel Elliott and DeMarco Murray talking about Ezekiel Elliott, and he's convinced, which is not a big surprise, but he's convinced that Elliott is going to break his team record of 1,841 rushing yards. And so, you know, it's funny because, and I'm going to say this and probably until the first week of the season, unless something dramatically changes, I'm so torn on the first three guys of Bell, Johnson, and Zeke. And I will change it probably 100 times between now and the start of the season, or at least 3 times. It's really interesting to think that he can get there. He thinks he's going to get there. Murray thinks he's going to get there. And if he does get there with the 15-plus touchdowns that he's going to get, he's going to be the number one running back. Mm-hmm. And so, especially if his receptions go up from, you know, the mid-20s to somewhere close to 40 to 50, which he's easily capable of doing. So he may have swayed me a little bit, but there's just so much. I do have two fun stories coming up, which I'm looking forward to writing. One, I asked every receiver that was there for the most part, and a bunch of the defensive backs who the best receiver in the NFL is. So that's going to be something that comes out in the summer or the fall, and or early fall, and just the state of tight ends. So I spoke to Jimmy Graham about it. I spoke to Travis Kelce about it. I'm expecting to speak to Tony Gonzalez about it. And so just the nature of the position, just to kind of piggyback on what we were talking about, just how things have changed and could potentially get better moving into 2017 from a fantasy perspective.
Can I make one other observation, Adam?
Oh, yeah.
The eyeball test. We always talk about it during the preseason when we're watching these guys on TV or on our computer going through the motions of the preseason. When you're up close and personal with them, there are some guys who are like, wow, I didn't realize he was that big. And there's other guys where they're like the size of like 18-year-olds. It's incredible how some of these guys are in the NFL and they're just supremely talented athletes who just aren't big, strong guys. T.Y. Hilton is one of those guys.
Oh, Odell Beckham. If you stand him next to Dez Bryant, you stand him next to Demaryius Thomas, you stand him next to these, you know, even Doug Baldwin.
Doug Baldwin is small.
Is small.
Yeah.
You know, so but Beckham is to me, is the interesting one because he plays more on the outside than any of those guys. Baldwin plays inside.
Mm-hmm.
T.Y. Hilton can play inside. Tyreek Hill is obviously very small.
Yep.
He can play, you know, everywhere. There was some little news nuggets, I think, you know, that are worth mentioning. Obviously, the Tyreek Hill news about Andy Reid saying he's going to play or hopes to get him on the field for 70 snaps.
We can jump around or we can, you know, talk about these individually. Like, you want to talk about Tyreek Hill. I wanted, before we got into specific players, I don't know, I wanted to get a sense of the Pro Bowl a little bit. I know you didn't stay for the game. I'll be honest with you. I did not watch the game. I really have never been a big Pro Bowl fan, but, I know the players, they weren't thrilled about going to Orlando, you know, instead of Hawaii. Did they seem genuinely excited to be there? Was it fun?
Oh, I you know, Dave alluded to it. I took my family to Disney World and we go quite a bit, because my kids are both under the age of 5. So I took them, they drove up and met me there. And on Saturday, Delaney Walker and his family were, I saw him in Disney World. So I know talking to a bunch of guys there and just, you know, being around them, listening to their conversations, they did go to the park. They were part of, you know, some festivities that were part of the Pro Bowl. They had a parade with the players, on one of the days. So they seemed to enjoy it. You know, this was I think more of a situation where their families could come in bulk, as opposed to maybe taking one or two people to Hawaii. So
sure.
I didn't hear any complaints about the game being there at all.
Good. I'm glad. Okay, yeah, so let's talk football here. Let's talk fantasy football, and then we'll go through some news and notes. The Jets have a new offensive coordinator. The Colts and the 49ers have new general managers. Cleveland is apparently interested in Jimmy Garoppolo, according to the Cleveland Plain Dealer, and a lot of Steelers news stemming from one interview with their president, Art Rooney. Also, Carson Palmer and whether or not he's going to retire. But, yeah, Tyreek Hill, you mentioned it, Jamie. They want to get him 70 snaps. I looked at his last four games. He played about 30 snaps in weeks 15 and week 16. Weeks 15 and 16, about 30 snaps per game. And then closer to 40 snaps per game in week 17 and in the postseason game against Pittsburgh, and those were obviously big games. One thing I noticed about Tyreek Hill, and he's a rookie, but pretty bad stat of yards per catch, 9.7 yards per catch. That is very low. That is like Jarvis Landry, and they're different players. So I don't know. There's not really much statistically to go on here with Tyreek Hill. I figure you really have to just think about his talent, the plays that what he's capable of doing. And then I know people are going to compare him to Cordarrelle Patterson. When you hear 70 snaps a game, that's a lot. What do you think his potential is? Forget about his potential. That's obviously very high. What do you think his most likely outcome is?
Well, I think the one thing that's nice about him is they recognize getting the ball in his hand. And this is a team, especially in Andy Reid. Remember Dexter McCluster, and they wanted to have this kind of similar situation. You know, what was his position? Well, his position is offensive weapon. Remember, we were calling him the OW for a while.
Yeah.
This is the type of player he could be. And I think his yards per catch, I don't know if that speaks to him as much as it does to Alex Smith.
Yeah, it's part of it. Yeah.
Just the way that he plays. So I would imagine 70 snaps, you know, that probably lends itself to, I'll say, what would you say, 5 to 6 catches a game, if that's the case?
I don't know if you can hang your hat on that.
I'm not saying hang your hat on it, but by the end of the season, you know, if you ballpark it, given what the receiving core is, let's just say 5 catches a game and maybe 5 carries a game. You know, so they probably try to get the ball in his hand 10 times. I don't think that's a stretch, given the type of player that he is.
Do you think that would happen on a regular basis?
Yes.
10 times a game?
Yeah.
I don't know if I can buy into that. I know they're talking about it. I spent a few minutes
talking
to Andy Reid.
You'd really be surprised.
He was the biggest topic.
By the end of the season, that he doesn't have 75 total touches? Catches and carries?
Well, wait a minute. You said 10 per game. And now you're saying 75 total or 75 carries, 75 catches?
No, 75
of each.
So let's say, my math was wrong. Let's say it's 100 total touches. That's a stretch?
No, but that's not 10 a game.
Right.
Unless he misses 6 games, which I don't want to talk
no,
about.
No,
10,
I don't think
10 a game is a lot.
Touches,
10 a game
but let's
is
just
a
say
lot.
Let's say 120.
120 now.
No, I would take the under.
You take the under?
I would take the under. I think with Tyreek Hill, when it comes to fantasy.
What did he have this year, Adam? Do you have it in front of you?
I can.
I think when it came to Hill this year, predicting what he can do from a week-to-week basis is going to be really tough.
Oh, for sure.
We couldn't do it, but the one thing we knew about him was that he'd get those opportunities. And that it just goes to what you're saying. 10 touches per game,
80,
I don't know if he's going to get that on a regular
85,
basis.
85 touches.
And that's playing on average about 35 to 40 snaps a game.
There were there was definitely a start to the season where he wasn't playing nearly as much.
Yeah. So I'll say 120 is safe.
Okay, well. That could be pretty good. So in the draft we did a month ago, he went just ahead of Dante Moncrief, some other wide receivers who went in that range.
Is he the type of player that you draft and you start every week? You just close your eyes.
I think he's the type of player that you draft with the hope of finding out within the first 3 weeks if you could start him.
How about?
So I would say, like, we talked about this on our last show and coming off the draft. Derrick Henry, somebody you're going to draft. With not feeling comfortable starting him early in the season. You're waiting for DeMarco Murray to get hurt.
Right.
Now, granted, position scarcity is a total different conversation with this. I think Tyreek Hill is that type of receiver. I think he's a number 3 receiver that you draft with the idea of, okay, maybe he's a starter for me. Maybe he's a flex for me. Maybe
you're taking a chance.
You're obviously taking a chance. But I think once you get into the mid rounds, when it's somebody of this potential, because by the end of the year, he was being started on a regular basis, especially in you know, teams that were, you know, getting closer to the playoffs and trying to make the playoffs. I think he's that type of guy. And again, his quarterback holds him back. His lack of being a dominant receiver holds him back. the Cordarrelle Patterson comparison is very valid. Adam, we just published our rankings today. They're not you'll be able to see them Super Bowl Sunday. So whenever anybody's listening to this, by Monday of next week, they will certainly be everywhere on our site.
And we'll tweet out links. You'll
right.
see it.
I don't know where you ranked him. I think I have him 34th at receiver.
I think he went too early. I mean, we've talked about this a lot. He went too early in this draft because look at the receivers that Tyreek Hill went ahead of. Moncrief, Edelman, Brandon Marshall, Terrell Pryor, Sterling Shepard. Moncrief, Edelman, Marshall, Pryor, Shepard. Would you take Hill over any of those guys?
Maybe Shepard.
Yeah. I was thinking maybe Pryor, but.
No, I like Pryor.
Yeah.
I like him too.
I've got Hill and Shepard separate. I've got him in that same range as you, Jamie. Separated just by a couple slots.
Yeah, Pryor's a pretty good player. There's no question.
He's got potential, and you've got to figure that Cleveland will improve their quarterback situation.
Yeah, with a bad quarterback situation, he had 1,000 yards.
What about Garoppolo there? I mean, so Mary Kay Cabot reporting that they are interested in acquiring him, and they've made trades with the Patriots before, obviously. Would that excite you?
Yeah, I mean, if they could keep the number one overall pick, trade 12 and a third, 12, third and a fourth, you know, whatever it's going to take to make this deal happen, then they still have the opportunity to draft somebody great. They still have, enough draft picks, you know, after what they did last year to trade out of the spot.
Trade 12 overall?
That's what it's going to take.
Oh my gosh. That's a tough pill to swallow.
Well, not if you're confident enough that he's the guy.
Woo! I bet a lot of people who root against the Patriots would be pretty unhappy if they gave up if they got the 12th overall pick for a backup quarterback.
Do the Browns have the first pick in every round? So do they have 33?
I'm not sure.
Top pick in round 2?
Not sure.
I think they do.
Makes sense.
If that's the case, maybe that's the pick they dangle for Garoppolo first. I'm not sure how much demand there is for Garoppolo. And I almost wonder if it's going to take Tony Romo landing somewhere first.
The problem is that two teams that are quarterback needy are in the same division. The Jets and the Bills are not going to get Jimmy Garoppolo.
Right.
So it's San Francisco. It's Cleveland.
Mm-hmm.
Houston doesn't have the ammo to go trade for him.
Nope. Chicago.
Chicago's probably going to be in the mix.
I don't know if they want to give up their first round pick.
It's such a good, it's really not a bad landing spot. There's talent there in Hugh Jackson.
There is. The offensive line's a concern.
Oh, that's terrible. Yeah, it's terrible.
So, you know, quarterback can be great, but if he's on his back, it's hard to complete passes. But you're right. There are a lot of receivers there that can help him out. And Hugh Jackson's a smart guy.
Hugh Jackson, there's good running back talent. I mean, you know, mm-hmm. say what you will about Crowell and Johnson. They're not a bad duo combined. And a good quarterback gets Herd Barnage back around, you know. So you also have one of the better offensive linemen in football, and Joe Thomas there. So there's a building block to build around.
Hey guys, if I could pause from this fun conversation and tell you about something very important. Let's talk about SeatGeek. Download that SeatGeek app right now, or go to SeatGeek.com. Our promo code is FFT on SeatGeek. You get a $20 rebate when you use FFT. You get a $20 rebate off your first SeatGeek purchase. So SeatGeek makes buying and selling tickets to games and concerts so easy. And I use it all the time. It's really become the only place I go for tickets. So next week, for example, I'm going to keep checking on Red Hot Chili Peppers tickets. I'll search for the event on SeatGeek. SeatGeek will search multiple ticket sites. It does all that work for me, tells me the best value, and that's how you save money. That is how you get the best deal. Again, download the SeatGeek app. Enter the promo code FFT. SeatGeek is going to send you $20 after you've made your first ticket purchase. This is the easiest way, the most affordable way to get to the game or get to the concert. That's SeatGeek, and our promo code is FFT.
Can I say something real quick?
Yeah.
So we're doing this show on National Signing Day, and Illinois State has signed the best name in the history of sports.
Oh.
Are you ready for this?
Yeah.
He's 6'7", 285 pounds, and his name is Kobe Buffalo Meat.
What?
I've seen it being tweeted everywhere.
What?
Oh, Redbirds.
Kobe Buffalo Meat.
Oh my gosh.
Do a search.
And he's a 6'7" offensive lineman. I am seeing this. Kobe.
That's the best.
No
I hope
way.
He makes it to the NFL. Just please make it to the NFL.
He's gonna. The name like that, how could you not?
Well, he could stink.
It's amazing. That's amazing. Oh. So we have the, yeah, we have a plenty of signing day coverage. I know you're going to hear this after the fact, but go back to the website. Everything's going to be on demand, I'm sure. Some really good video there, and yeah, go to CBSSports.com. All right, more news from the Pro Bowl. Yeah, you want to talk about Jay Ajayi? He talked about his offensive line. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I spoke to Jay, and, you know, he said what they were able to do in that three-game stretch, and it was the two 200-yard games, one against Pittsburgh, one against Buffalo, and then the following game against the Jets, which at the time had a great run defense. He thinks if they can have that for a full season, he could be a monster. And I don't think that's a big stretch to say that. So his season is so weird when you look at it because he had really four great games. Now, he had six games with double digits in fantasy points, but four of them, three 200-yard games in the game against the Jets, which were just really outstanding. But his metrics are great when you just take a step back from them because, according to Pro Football Focus, he was number one in their elusive rating, which is what he did in basically his yards after contact, what he did when he was didn't have any blockers in front of him. So he was the number one running back in football in that regard. And he averaged, I think, is 4.9 yards per carry. He was two games really were bad for him once he became the starter. He had two games under 7 fantasy points. So he really, his floor was about 7, which is not bad. He just didn't have a lot of high-end consistent games. So he had 6 games of, I believe, 9 that he started because you remember what happened to him in the beginning of the year. So he started 9 games, 6 of them with double digits in fantasy points. Or maybe I'm miscounting. I think it was 12. Six of 12.
This is Jay Ajayi we're talking about. And to be fair to Ajayi, the two games with 5 fantasy points in standard were against Arizona and at the Jets. Matt Moore was his quarterback for both. Well, I guess Tannehill got hurt at the end of the Arizona game. But so he faced good defenses when he had those two really bad games.
All right.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, he's an interesting guy to look at going forward. I really hope that he gets a healthy Mike Pouncey for at least 13 games. He hasn't played a full season, I think, since 2013. So that's troubling. They have to make a decision on Brandon Albert, who's their left tackle, who's going to cost them $10 million against the cap. And then they have to make a decision on Bushrod, who is a free agent. So they have three guys that, you know, are kind of moving parts for what's in front of him. But he does have his center. He does have a replacement left tackle in Laremy Tunsil. They would just have to replace their guard spots. That's one thing that the Dolphins have to address. And, you know, that's something to keep an eye on if you're a Jay Ajayi keeper owner or, you know, just are interested in drafting Ajayi somewhere in the mid second round.
Yeah. Also was reading that, that his patience could get better, you know, and that's like a lot of people just think you're a running back, you get the ball, you run forward. No, there's patience and there's vision and all that. And that'll get better, as he gets more work. They're hoping that'll get better.
Dave, but that also could hold him back, though, you know, just looking the way he runs.
Because he's so, like, violent, or?
Well, he pushes pile.
Yeah,
you know, if in fact, you look at his, you know, yards per carry and skew it how you want to, because he did have, you know, three huge games. But one of those games, you know, we got to 200 yards against Buffalo the second time. He had 32 carries. So it's not like it was, you know, big run, and then, you know, he just grinds his way through the rest of it. So I think the one thing that concerns me about Ajayi is at what point does this knee issue catch up to him?
Yeah, he's interesting in keeper leagues. Cause actually, we have a keeper question about Jay Ajayi. But, you know, remember, he fell in the draft because of long-term concerns about his knee, Jay Ajayi.
Right.
So he's kind of interesting in that regard. Well, we can talk about that later when we have the keeper question. Emails at fantasyfootball@cbsi.com. Dave, kind of buried the lead. You spoke to your real-life hero, Philip Rivers. you had Rivers autograph the elastic of your underwear, which is kind of weird. But
no, I did not have to do that.
But that's pretty amazing.
I pulled down my polo right where I button it, and I said, here, Phil, sign right here on my, my right chest. And he obliged. That was great. I'm going to have it tattooed on.
Nice.
No, it was cool. It was cool to meet him and talk to him and, you know, very, very friendly. And we really got to talking about his receivers and really had a lot of praise for Tyrell Williams and just how big and fast of a target he is. And how he really hopes that Keenan Allen can bounce back from his ACL and be a major contributor. Asked him if he wanted to get both of those guys to the Pro Bowl next year. He said that would be great. So I think that you look at the Chargers, and they're a team that has a lot going against Phillip Rivers for 2017. Their defense should be pretty good. Their run game with Melvin Gordon should be pretty good. I don't know how often they're going to be
so far back that Phillip Rivers is going to throw a ton and put up gaudy numbers. This might be the first year in a long while where Phillip Rivers isn't in my top 12 to begin the season.
Where'd you put him?
I think he's just outside.
Yeah, he's 15 for me.
Right. I think there's a chance that they could take the foot off the gas a little bit. Anthony Lynn is the new coach. I asked him about Lynn. He said he seems like it's a good guy, but really it felt like they're just going to, you know, they kept Ken Whisenhunt.
Yep.
So they're just going to keep everything the same, and Whisenhunt's going to call the plays, and, you know, Anthony Lynn might say, let's, you know, splash a little more with the run game than anything else. Makes me a little nervous about Phillip Rivers as a fantasy starter.
I think he's still one of those guys, though. Like in our last mock draft, Chris Towers took him as his starter. He was the last owner to pick a quarterback. That's the type of guy that Phillip Rivers is going to end up being. You know, one of the guys you just wait and see how far you have to go. And then if you miss on, let's say you want Dak Prescott or you want Kirk Cousins or you want Derek Carr or Mariota, then Rivers is the guy that you end up with. And he can get you through certainly the early part of the season. That's what we've seen the last 3 years from him. And so then you just got to deal with, is there going to be another late season, not collapse, but just, you know, sort of downturn. But he's still a very capable fantasy quarterback. He just may not be a top 10 guy. That's kind of what you have to deal with when you deal with him.
If he's got, you know, some matchups that he has in 2017, he's at the Jets, he's home against the Browns, home against Washington, at Dallas. One of those matchups, if that's his matchup week one, maybe a couple of those games to start the season,
sure,
the guy you could start your year with as your quarterback, and then you go from there.
Okay. And just let's see, I'll pick and choose a little bit here. Dez Bryant. Jamie spoke to Dez Bryant. He says he feels 100% again, and he finished the year pretty strong with that game against Green Bay in the playoffs. 2012 to 2014, Dez Bryant was a top five wide receiver each year. He scored 12 or more touchdowns each year. Is he potentially a first round pick next year, Dez Bryant?
I don't think so, because I don't know if he's going to be taken ahead of, and I wouldn't take him ahead of, you know, you know what the big three are. It's still going to be the same. Brown, Beckham, and Julio, whatever order you like them. And then it's that next group, which I think he's at the tail end of, but I don't know he's going to overcome or supersede these guys in what the draft value will be. So it's Mike Evans, it's AJ Green, it's Jordy Nelson. You know, so I think he's right there. To me, he's the seventh best fantasy receiver. Some people may take T.Y. Hilton over him, and I have no problem with that. But I think Dez is certainly proven. And even last year, you know, his numbers overall don't look great. But if you look at, you know, what he did in the games that he was able to play and then how he finished, like you said, Adam, with that playoff game where he was just, you know, he wasn't the most dominant player on the field because that was Aaron Rodgers. But, you know, he could make an argument that he was second. And so he definitely looked like he's back to being his old self. And that's what he told me. And I said, do you feel like you're 100% yet? And he said, what do you think? And I said, you look pretty good in your last game. He goes, yep.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, you kind of have to bank on the touchdowns because Bryant isn't a guy who's ever been like a 1,600. He's never gotten 1,400 yards, which is an amazing season, but he hasn't done it. But, you know, 12, 13, 16 touchdowns. And the thing is with the Cowboys, like, who else is going to catch touchdowns for them unless they,
right,
unless they add someone, which I think they should.
Well, Terrence Williams is a free agent, so they could, you know, upgrade there in some capacity. Maybe it's a rookie. Maybe they give Bryce Butler a bigger role. Cole Beasley, you know what he is. So I think the interesting thing about Dez, he's very similar to Jordy in the touchdowns kind of make or break their years.
Right.
And so, you know, I think you just look at it as you know what you're getting. And if he bakes it through a full season, then he could be a top five guy and certainly could bring back great value, because I think where he's going to be drafted is somewhere between 15 and 20. To me, that's almost a steal.
So, Dave, last note here. You talked to Jordan Howard. What did he have to say?
Well, first of all, he said hi.
Oh, that's,
he's a big fan of Stranger Things, just like you.
Oh, great. Did you ask anybody about Stranger Things?
Not a person.
Oh, you should.
I asked him what he thinks his role will be in 2017, and it wasn't strange to hear that he thinks he's going to get more touches, more carries. He seemed very confident in that. Also said that he feels like he's a core part of the team, which, I mean, frankly, they don't have a lot of core players in Chicago.
One of two Pro Bowlers.
Right, exactly. So we talked about that, and we talked about his offensive line. To me, getting Josh Sitton put that team over the top, and Sitton was the one who was with him at the Pro Bowl. And they played fairly well all season long, and I feel like that weakness that we talked about when we discussed Jeremy Langford at this time last year, that's going to be a strength now for Jordan Howard. The interior of that line, assuming they keep all their guys and they're going to keep Long and Whitehair, I think Sitton's going to stay.
that's a huge strength for them. And their tackles, as bad as they were, they really, or as bad as their name is, Charles Leno and Bobby Massey, they were okay. Maybe they add another one, and maybe that line becomes a strength. So really, it comes down to just what this Chicago passing game looks like. And if they can put something together, and they managed to put something together with Matt Barkley last year, then maybe Jordan Howard can come back and be a good second-year running back. He feels like the guy, though, that takes the turn for the worse in the second year.
He could be Todd Gurley. I was thinking the same thing. He could be Todd Gurley.
But there's things that I see.
I don't, why?
Offensive line and the dedication to him.
Yep.
The fact that they didn't change coaching staffs. They kept their offensive coordinator. Yep. Maybe he can do it. Maybe he won't be next year's Todd Gurley.
I agree with you. I'm just of the guys from this class.
I mean, you're never going to say it's Zeke.
No, because Zeke has just so many things around him that make him
not in a way
solidified.
He's got the huge offensive line. Right. He's got the quarterback and the passing game and the coaching staff with continuity.
And a little bit of a safer division. You have to deal with Howard. Now, granted, we don't know what exactly it's going to look like, but Green Bay seems to reinvent their defense almost every year. Doesn't necessarily last for a full 16 games, but they tend to reinvent it at times. You know Minnesota's going to be tough. And so that's
he did well against Minnesota.
Oh, I'm not saying he doesn't have the opportunity to, because he seems to be a special talent. But the circumstances surrounding him, don't know who the quarterback is. Still some questions on the offensive line. You mentioned it with the tackles. If Alshon Jeffrey's gone, you're talking about Cameron Meredith being their number one guy. I don't know if that's necessarily the most exciting things for him. And still a questionable defense that's building and getting better, but could put them in some games where he doesn't have the necessarily ability to run like he did last year. So to me, he makes me a little bit nervous. That being said, I have him ranked fourth. You know, so there's a lot of confidence and faith in him.
Wait, you have him as the number four running back?
Yeah.
Okay.
Do you have him as a first round pick?
Yeah.
I do too.
Okay. Yeah, I think I'm just trying to think of the rookie running backs, and we're talking about Jordan Howard here. I could see Rob Kelly being a total bust next year. I could see it. Because you know me, I like guys who catch the ball.
Sure.
As long as if you don't catch the ball, and the funny thing about Gurley was he did start catching the ball, and he still was a bust. All right, cool. So let's talk about the Super Bowl. You think we should, maybe talk about the Super Bowl?
Which Super Bowl is it, Adam?
58. Super Bowl 58. This is Super Bowl 51.
And it's Sunday. Nah.
And I don't even know who is singing the national anthem.
It is, I think, three members of the cast of Hamilton.
It's not you.
It's not me. Well, that's a shame. That was a mistake. But more importantly, you are going to be cooking and eating great food on Super Bowl Sunday. And I, of course, cook and eat great food three times per week, all for less than $10 per person per meal with Blue Apron. And we've got a new URL for you. Write this down, everybody. Go to this URL, blueapron.com/fantasyfootball. It's blueapron.com/fantasyfootball. Go there now, check out this week's menu, get three free meals and free shipping. Hey, you want some free food? Yeah, of course you do. blueapron.com/fantasyfootball. Here's what you can get this month. How about cashew chicken stir fry with tango mandarins and jasmine rice? How about roasted pork with apple, walnut, and farro salad? There's some quinoa. There's an udon noodle soup. It's really creative stuff. There's a lot of variety. All delicious. All affordable. Again, we want you to go to blueapron.com/fantasyfootball. I love Blue Apron. You will too. You will not regret it. blueapron.com/fantasyfootball. All right. So now what are you going to be eating, for the Super Bowl? This is like the only day of the year where I think I prefer wings to pizza. Otherwise I'd go pizza.
Yeah. I mean, there's nothing wrong with both.
Yeah, I agree. But
a little bit of wings, a couple of slices. Some nachos, a little guacamole, ice cream sundae with hot fudge, chocolate sprinkles, and some sliced banana. Then the brownie comes in the second quarter. You get a nice big brownie, and there's chocolate chips in there, and it's all warm and gooey, and that's good. Then nap through halftime. Then cheeseburger in the third quarter.
Okay.
Wash it down with a Diet Coke. Then in the fourth quarter, you got to watch it a little bit, so maybe some Special K. But sometimes when it's a close game, I mean, you really got to get down and dirty and get some like deep fried egg rolls.
Ooh, wow.
Cheese steak.
How gourmet.
Blue Apron doesn't have that stuff, does it?
Probably, but not all at the same time. So, like, there's only one, like, weird specific request that I make, I'll bring probably, is, French onion dip. I really like potato chips with French onion dip. For whatever reason, I've always associated that with the Super Bowl. I must have been at some parties I had when, or I went to when I was growing up. So that will be a staple for me.
So, I have a question. Will you be having that at your rehearsal dinner?
I might be. You certainly will not be.
You think I'm not coming?
I do think that, for sure. Yeah, so, Jamie, favorite Super Bowl foods?
I like to grill steaks for Super Bowl.
Oh, I don't know that I do steak for Super Bowl, but that's never a bad idea. Medium rare, obviously?
Depends what the family wants.
What do you want?
I like it medium to medium well.
That's
what kind of cuts?
Terrible.
I don't know what I'll do.
I get so upset when people have medium well. Just, you're not even, you don't even, no. I feel like the 7-minute abs guy right now. Okay, anyway.
You look like him a little bit.
Thanks, sure. I look a lot more like Ben Stiller than the 7-minute abs guy. So.
Or Teen Wolf.
I think I've been pretty bad at picking Super Bowl games recently. So that's the good news for Falcons fans. The bad news is I just can't see the Falcons winning this game. I just cannot see it.
Well, I mean, they got a great offense.
They do.
It's going to take, you know, their defense has been fantastic throughout the playoffs, you know, the two games in the playoffs so far. But they were very good to close the season. It's funny, when Desmond Trufant went down is when their defense actually turned the corner. But their young guys have stepped up. Vic Beasley's been great. He hasn't been great in the playoffs, but he's been great for the season. He's going to have to get in Tom Brady's face. They got to push him around, move the pocket a little bit. I mean, Adam, you know this better than anybody, that the way to, you know, get to him in the Super Bowl, as the Giants did twice and the Seahawks did for a good portion of that game, is to make him move.
Yeah.
You know, if you make him move, he's going to be uncomfortable. So
it's not an easy thing to do.
No. And I think the Patriots offensive line can handle it. I don't think either team has a great pass rush.
No.
Which is good for the quarterbacks.
Pete Frisco went back and watched the Giants Bills Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Game.
Yeah, he wrote about it. Yeah.
He wrote about it?
He's picking the Falcons. And one of the things he talked about was, I mean, even though he is picking the Falcons, how great Belichick is at game planning. And I'll let you describe it, but the defense he used as the Giants defensive coordinator against the Bills, what was that, their K-gun offense?
Yes. Yeah. So they had, you know, the best offense in the NFL at the time. Thurman Thomas, Andre Reed, Jim Kelly, you know, the first
Don Beebe
of the triplets. And Belichick used two down linemen in that game.
He's done it from time to time with the Patriots.
Two down linemen, four linebackers, and five defensive backs on the field.
Right.
And so he just confused them. Now, as Pete will tell you from watching that game, I don't know how well you remember it, Adam, being, what are you, about three or five?
First game I ever watched. Ever remembered watching.
Yeah, it's funny. I don't know. Do you remember the first game you ever watched?
It might have been Super Bowl 19. I remember going to a Super Bowl party.
Well, who played?
For 19?
Yeah.
Niners Dolphins.
Oh, okay.
The game I remember, and the game I remember watching on TV, because I'd been to games in person, but the game I remember watching on TV was the Dolphins Bears Monday night game when the Dolphins beat the Bears to ruin their undefeated season in 85. Two down linemen, and he just confused them, but the Bills dropped some passes in that game, according to Pete. And it's going to be interesting to see what Belichick has in store for Matt Ryan. But that offensive line has been great for Atlanta. Falcons, Ryan and the Falcons have been playing out of this world. And, you know, they have a lot of playmakers. You know, when you look at Julio Jones, yes, he's the best receiver on the field. And the consensus was he's the best receiver in the NFL from the questions I asked at the Pro Bowl. But, you know, Mohamed Sanu has been fantastic. Taylor Gabriel's a threat. The running back's catching the ball in the backfield. You know, they've gotten enough production from their tight ends, whether it's Hooper or Toilolo. It's going to be a fun game. At least I hope it is.
Yeah, you know, I'll give you another stat from the Giants-Bills Super Bowl that's pretty important. The Giants had the ball for 40 minutes and 33 seconds. So you can talk about the defense all you want. They ran the ball. They kept the Bills off the field. I don't know that the Patriots are going to want to do that or even have to do that.
They can.
They could. Blunt has
they
not
could.
Been running the
they
ball
could.
Well.
Not.
I think both teams could. I think that could be the secret of the game, actually. is which team can run the ball well.
Sure.
And if the Patriots come out in a 2-5 look,
they won't.
They're going to run the ball until the
Patriots
stop. It doesn't
have to be running the ball, though. I mean, the Patriots do such a good job with their short passing game that it's essentially like running the ball.
Yeah. Well, all right. This is number one scoring offense against number one scoring defense, and this is the sixth time in Super Bowl history the defense is 4-1 in those scenarios. And I'm pretty sure last year was also number one offense versus number one defense, right?
The Panthers were the number one.
Were the Panthers offense? Number one last year? I think they might
I'm
have.
I'm pretty sure they were.
They were number one in time of possession. I know that much.
I'm almost positive they were. And the defense.
Yeah, but the Patriots have an X factor, though. They have never lost a game with Deion Lewis on the field.
Isn't that amazing?
16-0.
Oh, that's incredible. But the defense almost always wins when the number one defense, and yes, Carolina was number one scoring. When number one faces number one offense and defense, and the Patriots, of course, lowest scoring defense. Now, people would say they don't have the best defense in football. They just played an incredibly easy schedule, but they still have a really good defense. They don't give up a lot of big plays. They've gone. Did D'Angelo Williams did not score a rushing touchdown in the AFC Championship game, did he? I don't think
he
caught
he
one. He caught one.
Oh, maybe he caught one.
But
no, he ran one.
He did?
Because Ben threw one.
Okay, so he had two. So that was the first time in 10 games they.
No. Ben threw one to Kobe Hamilton.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. All right. Either way, before that game, they had gone 9 straight games without allowing a rushing touchdown to a running back or more than 60 yards rushing in 6 straight games. I mean, they've been great against the run. But the Falcons have scored 33 or more points in 6 straight games and 7 out of 8. It's a different beast. What do you guys think?
This is also the second highest points per game allowed, a defense with the second highest points per game allowed in the Super Bowl era.
Yeah, that's why I can't pick them. I think the Patriots are going to do whatever they want offensively.
And I think that Belichick will eventually come up with a stop of the Falcons.
Oh, if they stop them early. Like, it's what happened to the Panthers last year.
Mm-hmm.
Panthers offense got stalled early, and that game just took a turn right from the beginning.
I don't know if it's going to happen early. Wouldn't surprise me a bit if this game is 17 all at halftime.
Could be.
But
I mean, look, we saw Houston.
There will be some sort of adjustment made that it's not that the Patriots defense has a lot of great talent. It's that I trust their coaches to come up with a game plan for the Falcons. Even though the Falcons have been very dangerous offensively, I've read pretty much everything about Kyle Shanahan this week and what he's doing and how he's using these guys and kind of, what's the word I want to use? Masking. Tendencies of his team and how every route kind of looks the same until the routes actually run. Like it seems like he's done a really good job of that. And I still think Belichick can sniff him out. Mm-hmm. Belichick's played against Shanahan before. He's played against Matt Ryan before. I believe he's undefeated against both, but it's just not a big enough sample size.
Let's give Dan Quinn some credit. Let's give Dan Quinn some credit too. I mean, he's obviously anchored some good defenses. He's faced the Patriots in the Super Bowl before. And then
he's been a coach in 3 of the last 4.
It's amazing. And I always bring up that the Patriots, every Super Bowl they play is close. So that's giving me a little more hope for the Falcons because, like I had said originally, I thought this was going to be a 10-point game. I'll take the Patriots by like 4. And I don't know what the score is, but I feel like it'll be a little more low scoring. I'd take
28-24?
27-23.
Yeah, I think somewhere in that range. I'm not sure we get a 30-point game from either team. That's kind of where I'm thinking. Yes, like a 28-24, 27. So you guys are along the same lines, Patriots by about 4?
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Cool. Well,
is that the kiss of death that all 3 of us picked the Patriots?
Not if you're America. I think most people are going to be rooting for the Falcons.
Who'd you have in last year's Super Bowl, Jamie?
Broncos.
Yeah, I had Carolina.
I thought like Carolina was going to smoke that. I thought Carolina was going to kill them.
And then in 49, I had the Seahawks, and that was a very close game.
Yeah.
Might have been the best Super Bowl ever. We were talking about that.
Yeah,
in Orlando.
Conversation.
It was, I believe, John Breach, one of our guys, ranked every Super Bowl, and I'm pretty sure that was number one for him.
Will did.
No, I don't think so.
Yeah. The last one I got right
was Will?
Super Bowl 48. Seahawks over Denver.
Who knows their CBSSports.com writer the best? CBSSports.com ranks the Super Bowls. All right, Google.
Are we really listening to you use the
Who
internet?
Did it? Oh, Will did it, but I think This was 2 hours ago. I think this has already been done. I thought somebody did it like a couple weeks, like a week ago.
No, the only reason I know it is because Prisco told us at the Super Bowl that Will was doing it.
At the Pro Bowl?
I'm sorry, the Pro Bowl, yes.
All right, so let's see who Will had number one. Which game Will had number one? Yeah, Patriots-Seahawks. And number two was Giants-Patriots. Patriots are always in great Super Bowls. So we could, hopefully we'll get
another one. Has
there
been a dominant receiver of Julio's caliber to win the Super Bowl?
Yeah.
What do you mean?
Jerry Rice?
Ever?
Somebody who's considered to be the best receiver.
Jerry Rice won some.
Oh, yeah, Jerry Rice.
Yeah, Jerry Rice.
Yeah, we haven't seen it, though, in a while.
Really? Like, I can't
believe
you.
I was blanking on that. No, but we haven't seen one in a while. I mean, just think about the last, what, six or seven Super Bowls.
You're right. You're right. Hmm.
Maybe he is going back to Jerry Rice.
No, well, Michael Irvin. Michael Irvin, definitely, right?
Well, I mean, Marvin Harrison and Reggie Wayne. Won Super Bowl 41. Is it really going that far back?
I guess maybe the diva type receiver. Not that Julio falls in that category, but you haven't seen like the.
Yes, I know what you're saying. It's like a new era of wide receiver in the NFL, and I don't think that wide receiver has won a Super Bowl.
Right, like the last one I'm thinking of that was close was T.O.
Well, he lost the Super Bowl.
Right, he lost.
Hmm. Yeah, Randy Moss.
Randy Moss lost the Super Bowl.
He had the best game.
Yeah, he had a pretty good game.
Let me ask you a dumb question that I should know. What's the surface in Houston?
Grass.
Oh, okay. Okay, so that's better for the Patriots.
Unless they changed it for the game.
Nah, they shouldn't do that. And Lady Gaga halftime?
Yep.
You should know that I think that the song Just Dance is one of the all-time greats. Like, it's one of my 20 favorite songs ever, and I think it is the best dance song since a Michael Jackson song, since, like, Thriller.
Do you put it on every morning when you're brushing your teeth and shaving?
No, you know what it is? This is what it is. Allie leaves. Fiance leaves.
Right.
He does, like, the risky business, like he...
yeah. Dances around the house wearing only sunglasses. A shirt.
No, I mean, maybe during the summer. I get up and the first thing I do is put a sweatshirt on.
If Zoe could talk, the story Zoe could tell.
Oh, forget it. Forget it. Can that guy stop picking his nose for 5 seconds? All right. Let's read some emails. FantasyFootball@CBSI.com. From Parker. Keep one player, Keenan Allen in the 10th or Tyler Eifert in the 11th. It's a three receiver league and it's half point PPR.
Keenan Allen.
I might go Eifert. It depends on if he's healthy by the summer.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't even think it's close.
I don't know if I can trust Keenan Allen.
You can trust Tyler Eifert? He's been hurt just as much.
That's a fair point. He's been hurt a little less. He's hurt a little less.
Not really.
He's not coming off a torn ACL, Keenan Allen.
He's coming off two back surgeries.
They both suck. His team's terrible. What's his name, Parker?
10th and 11th rounds. Pretty good value for either.
Especially with three receiver league.
Parker. This is Tony from Northwest Indiana. He put Stranger Things in the subject line, and then he said, now that I have your attention, is Gronkowski worth a second-round keeper in a 10-team, two-quarterback PPR league? I can keep two players, then the snake draft would start for me in the third round. I'm keeping Julio in the first. So would you keep Gronk in the second? 10-team, two-quarterback PPR.
It's not bad just because it's easy to recover in a 10-team league. So I'd rather draft him in the third round in a 10-team league. I would draft him in the second round in a 12-team league. But you're not going to get him.
No. Well, you might get him. Depends on where the pick is in round two. He might fall to you. You might get him back, but then what's the point?
Yeah, I would keep
him. I think I would too.
As long as obviously the reports are yourself.
This is from Devin in Sin City, Nevada.
What happened to you? Did your batteries run out?
I'm just making sure this is the right. I think it's from him. Hey, Bird, Dizzy. Train and Miles.
Those are musicians, jazz musicians.
Oh my gosh. Sax
Only a
man.
Jazz man would know that.
Sax man just dominated right there. Nice work, Jamie.
Yeah, you want to know the names?
Yeah.
Well, I think I can get Dizzy Gillespie.
Huh?
Miles Davis.
Miles Davis. That, yeah.
Peeing Your Pants is cool. Train. That's not Coltrane.
Probably it's John Coltrane.
And is Bird, who's Bird?
Bird is arguably the greatest saxophonist of all time, Charlie Parker.
Charlie Parker.
I'm very impressed right now. Very impressed. I run a 10-team dynasty league with 25-man rosters. Keep all forever. What is the value of Leonard Fournette or Dalvin Cook at this point? I know it's hard to say without knowing their landing spot, but should I give up Le'Veon Bell or Julio Jones to move from pick 9 to 1 or 2 in our rookie draft? Or would you top out more in the Allen Robinson, Jordan Reed range? It's so hard to get quality running backs in this format. All right, so that's interesting. He's in a format where everybody keeps everybody, basically. And you need the rookie draft to get your quality running back. Would you be willing to give up a Le'Veon Bell or a Julio Jones for Fournette or Cook?
Le'Veon's interesting because he's starting to get to the point where you have to worry a little bit. And where does he play maybe next year, maybe 2 years from now? So would you essentially be trading
Bell
for Fournette? I wouldn't do it for Cook.
You sure you wouldn't?
No.
I don't think I'm doing it for either one. And you got to give up pick 9 too. So it's Le'Veon and the 9th pick in the draft to move up to number 1.
The 9th pick in the rookie draft. The rookie draft.
Forget it. It's too much.
What if it's Le'Veon for 1 and you keep 9?
Well, now you're closer. So I've got 1 and 9. So theoretically, I get two shots at a running back.
You're getting Fournette and whoever.
I'm not sold on Fournette being the number 1 guy yet.
I've seen mock drafts with Cook going number 1. Running back. God, but that's going
to
depend on.
You know what?
Spot.
I have to know where these guys are playing.
Okay, so put them on the team. Team X, San Francisco. They don't need running.
I think I'm keeping Le'Veon.
I'm just hoping it's the Colts.
Okay, Colts. There you go. Great scenario.
Wow.
I'll take the guy in the Colts. I don't care who it is. I'll take the guy that goes to the Colts.
Over Le'Veon?
I would prefer.
You're taking Fournette or Cook on the Colts, whoever's on the Colts.
But you know what?
It's Tampa.
I don't think I'm doing it.
I think I might roll the dice.
You're hoping that guy, it's not going to be Zeke, but let's just say it's Gurley from 2 years ago as a rookie. That's the jumping off point because Gurley was very good as a rookie. You get that as the starting point, and then you're hoping that this guy becomes Le'Veon or close enough to it that you have the years that make him better.
There hasn't been a more consistent thing at running back than a Steeler running the ball the last 3 seasons.
Oh, of course.
Whether it's Le'Veon or D'Angelo.
But is Le'Veon the guy there?
Unless he gets hurt.
2 years from now. They franchise him this year and then they say, goodbye, we don't want to pay you.
Right.
He has another monster season.
Well, then I would go back and do the trade. Because I know I can't.
Of course.
If I'm making the decision that's Le'Veon, I'm committing to Le'Veon.
These are the scenarios you have to play out. I would say this. If he has to make the decision now, the answer is no. If we find out that Dalvin Cook is on the Colts, Fournette is on the Bucks, one of those 2 scenarios, flip-flop them, whoever the case may be, and you keep the 9 pick.
Can one of them end up on Dallas?
Then it makes it a different conversation.
Yeah.
Remember this conversation when we do our dynasty drafts, our dynasty rankings.
Oh, sure. Absolutely.
Yeah, you'll put these guys ahead of Le'Veon.
I think it's a different conversation. And look, it may be the conversation may be the guy who has the 1 pick may have something to give you else in return. So let's say it's Bell and the 9 pick for something and the 1 pick.
I also would like to say I don't really think the number 9 pick in a dynasty draft is all that valuable. I think
it depends on the year, not this year.
You could definitely strike gold, but you could also completely miss because you are really guessing.
Last year you probably could have gotten Michael Thomas at 9.
Yeah, or somebody much worse.
Corey Coleman.
Well, no, Corey Coleman was going like 3rd.
He going that high?
Yeah. Corey Coleman was in the guys that we were discussing at the number 1 receiver spot were Josh Doctson, who was a bust so far.
Mm-hmm.
Will Fuller, Coleman.
I don't think Fuller was even a first round guy in our rookie only.
Yeah, 100% was. Absolutely.
Man, I wish I remembered.
Hey, so you were so impressed with Jamie knowing Bird, Dizzy, Train, and Miles?
Yeah.
So if I asked you, who's Eric, Jimmy, Stevie Ray, and Leslie?
Clapton, Page, Stevie Ray Vaughan. Who's Leslie?
Leslie West.
Who that?
Isn't he a famous guitarist, or am I confusing?
No, he very well might be. I'm not really a buff.
Right, but
means.
Like that's your repertoire. Like, for example, if someone wrote me and said, Lou Giordano,
Dino, and Adam, Aurelio, Adam, you'll I know what that would be.
Adam, you'll be impressed. We were within driving distance, very close proximity to Giordano's.
Three Giordano's. There's three Giordano's.
And Dave said he didn't want to go.
Good for you. Good for you.
True story. But we did make a stop at Fuddruckers.
Would you be surprised that I ate a hamburger probably in half the time that Dave and Pete did?
Jamie housed a Fuddruckers burger.
It was. Speaking of Kobe buffalo meat, it was a Kobe burger at Fuddruckers.
And I had buffalo. I had a buffalo burger at Fuddruckers. Really good.
We ate at Illinois State.
Yeah. All right, let me read one more email here, and it's from Cooper, and he says, "Dear whoever is not on vacation this week, I have Melvin Gordon and Jay Ajayi in two keeper leagues. Who would you keep in these leagues? League one, Gordon in the fifth or Ajayi in the seventh? I can only keep for 1 year."
I'd go Gordon.
I'd go Ajayi with the value.
But they're both a good value.
I mean, they're essentially back-to-back in my ranking, so I like them both.
No, I like Gordon better.
Okay.
I like Gordon better too, but I like Ajayi two rounds later.
All right, and League 2, $200 auction budget, Gordon for 15 or Ajayi for 1? Unlimited years.
Unlimited years at that price?
Yeah, I think you got to go Ajayi there.
I think so, too.
Yep.
Yeah. Thank you, Cooper. Thank you, Dave. Thank you, Jamie. Super Bowl 57. Can't wait on Sunday. Looking forward to French onion dip and many more things. And looking forward to talking about it next week. Bye, guys.
Later.
Bye.